Rishos HaRabbanim. Thank you very much. I think this is our last shiur in the series, so I want to take the opportunity to thank all of you for coming to learn with me, and to thank Rabbi Muskin and Rabbi Proops for coming and arranging this, and for reaching out to me to arrange this shiur over the course of the year. It's been an absolute pleasure to prepare the shiur and to learn it together with you each and every month. I also want to just let you know how the entire Jewish community was so hurt by the terrible attack on your shul that happened a couple of weeks ago, and we are certainly with you, and we're certainly all in this together, and just whatever form of chizik we can offer, certainly here on the East Coast, where we're also unfortunately no stranger to anti-Semitism, we certainly want to be mechazik each other, and we'll continue to be mechazik each other at Bias Goel Tzedek, which should happen be'ezras Hashem b'mehera b'yameinu. Today, because it is the last year, I thought it would be a good time to discuss Rav Soloveitchik. We've discussed Rav Moshe and pretty much all of his contemporaries, but we have not yet had a shiur about Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik, and that, I think, is one of the more fascinating relationships in Rav Moshe Feinstein's life. Now, normally during this shiur, I spend 10 minutes just describing the personality of who the person is that we're talking about. I think that would be unnecessary when it comes to Rav Soloveitchik. You probably don't go a single Shabbos without hearing Rav Soloveitchik's name mentioned. You probably, most of us, much of our Torah Hashkafa is based on what we've heard from Rav Soloveitchik and his Talmidim, and therefore I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the Rav himself, but more about the Rav and his relationship with Rav Moshe and some of the halachic issues that they disagreed about. And if we have time, the primary halachic issue I wanted to focus on is the issue of women and Talmud Torah, where Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik had very, very divergent viewpoints on the issue of women and Torah study. So first, a little bit about Rav Soloveitchik. As we know, Rav Soloveitchik's last name was Soloveitchik. He was a scion of the Beis Brisk. He was named after his great-grandfather, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi. In fact, my uncle, Julius Berman, told me that he once was talking to the Rav's mother, and the Rav's mother said to him, "Do you notice anything strange about my son's name?" And he said, "What do you mean, something strange about your son's name? He's named after the Beis Halevi. What's strange about that?" So she said, "No, don't you realize that normally among Ashkenazi Jews, the first child is named after the mother's side of the family, not the father's side of the family? Why was my son named after my husband's side of the family, my husband's grandfather?" So she said, when she had a baby, Reb Chaim had come to visit her and requested, Reb Chaim had come to visit her and requested that the baby be named for his father, for the Beis Halevi. And she said, "Absolutely not. It's my right to name the first child after my side of the family, so no way, not going to name him after the Beis Halevi." And Reb Chaim negotiated with her and said, "I'll tell you what, if you name this one after the Beis Halevi, you can have all the rest. Instead of alternating 1-1, you could have all the rest." She signed on for that, and the Rav was named Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, but all the others, Rav Shmuel and Rav Aaron, all the others were named after her side of the family. She had the right to choose all of the other names, but he was certainly from that lineage of the Beis Brisk, and his style in halacha really reflected that. Rav Shechter would always tell us, Rav Soloveitchik would spend hours and hours being miyashev every minag Yisrael and how it's based in halacha. He was not so into chidushim in halacha. Rav Moshe, on the other hand, who we've been talking about for the past year, was very into chidushim in halacha, would say things that were astonishing in halacha, whereas Rav Soloveitchik had a much more traditional approach to halacha. Rav Soloveitchik was a genius at a very young age. He was recognized as a genius at a young age. His smicha from the Dvar Avram is astounding to read. He really only had one Rebbe in his life, like most true briskers only have one Rebbe in their life, and that is his father, meaning members of this family in general, all of their Torah comes from the father. In fact, if you read Rav Soloveitchik's own description of father and mother's role in a child's life, he really describes father more as a Rebbe than as a father, meaning that's the primary role of a father in the Soloveitchik family. It's interesting because la halacha, a Rebbe is like a father also. La halacha, The Chazal tell us that Bneichem Elu Talmidechem, that your Talmidim are like your children. In fact, I just learned last week, I don't know why I never knew this before, that when my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, Moreno Rav Shechter Shlita, first grew a beard, it was after a Salvagic died, so I assumed he did that just because now he was going to be looked at as the major Rosh Yeshiva in our Yeshiva. So everyone, so he thought it would be appropriate to grow a beard. Nope, that's not what happened. What happened is, Rav Salvagic passed away, he tore Kriya, and he observed the year of Avelus. Rav Shechter was not a biological child of Rav Salvechik, but he observed Avelus for the whole year. And that's why you see in that year his beard was kind of long because he just didn't cut his beard for the whole year. And then by the end of the year, the Rebbetzin Shechter said she liked the beard, so he kept it. But that's why he grew the beard. He grew the beard in Avelus over Rav Salvechik. Rav Shai Shechter told me that he remembers his brother, his father tearing Kriya when Rav Salvechik passed away. And not only that his brother who was over Bar Mitzvah also had to tear Kriya when Rav Salavitchik passed away. Rav Shai was still very young, he didn't have to tear Kriya, but Rav Shechter required that his boys over Bar Mitzvah should tear Kriya. So Rav Salavitchik was certainly his primary Rebbe, was certainly his father. Anyone who attended his shir would say that the most common phrase you would hear from him in shir, always in Yiddish, but the most common phrase he would say was, "I heard from my father in the name of my grandfather." That everything was based on the Masorah from the base brisk that he descended from. And the Jewish people need giants who can not only understand Torah Hashkafa, but can explain it to the masses and to the world. And that's where Rav Salavitch was entirely unique. Yeah, he was a Lamdan of the highest order. He was a Posek of the highest order. He was also an orator of the highest order. And he can explain things so, so clearly in Torah Hashkafa in a way that sounds reasonable. A lot of times you have people who understand Torah Hashkafa, but in the way they express it to others, it's like a bull in a china shop. They're being more destructive than they are being productive in trying to explain the Derechecha Darchi Noam of the Torah. Rav Salavitchik was gifted in that way. He was the teacher of generations of Rabbanim, which also, by the way, made him one of the most important poskim, which is something that people don't talk about that much, one of the most important poskim in the country, because all of these Rabbanim throughout the country were turning to him for their Piskei Halacha. And he also taught Balei Batim, which allowed him to connect directly with the people, which is also unique for a Rosh Yeshiva of his stature. He was the greatest orator of his time. One of my rabbis once described Rav Salavitchik's Yiddish, he described it as, it made Shakespeare look like a chump, meaning it was so poetic, it was so beautiful how Rav Salavitchik would speak Yiddish. He learned English and spoke in English even when speaking of common Jewish terms, meaning at some point he started saying Shir in English. There was a boy that didn't understand the Yiddish, it was a new generation, and he started saying Shir in English, but when once he switched to English, everything was in English, meaning the terms that we would normally use in Hebrew, even when we're speaking English, he translated those terms also. Everything, there was no Yirmiyahu, it was Jeremiah. There was no Moshe Rabbeinu, it was Moses. There was everything turned into to English. And his Koach HaSbara was just unbelievable. As one of his Talmidim described to me, he could explain a Chakira in Reb Chaim to this desk that I'm sitting at, and the desk would be enthralled with the explanation. It was just an incredible koach of being able to be masbir things. His relationship with Rav Moshe is fascinating. Rav Moshe was Rav Salavitchik's mother's first cousin, but not on the Feinstein side, meaning Rav Salavitchik's mother was a Feinstein, but it was Rav Elia, because her father was Rav Elia Prajner, Rav Elia Feinstein, but Rav Elia Feinstein's wife, Rav Salavitchik's mother's mother, and Rav Moshe's mother were sisters. So that's how Rav Salavitchik's mother was first cousins with Rav Moshe. His mother was Rav Salavitchik's mother, mother's mother was the one who was connected to Rav Moshe, ironically, the secular influence in Rav Salavitchik's life certainly did not come from his father, meaning the drive to achieve in the secular areas of study, that came from his mother, from the Feinstein side of the family, not from the Salavitchik side of the family. When Rav Moshe died, Rav Shechter writes in one of his Svarim, Now, when Rav Moshe Feinstein passed away in whatever it was, 1985, 1986, it was on the Tainus Esther, and the family had asked the shamash for the Rav, the one who was taking care of the Rav, to hide the newspaper from the Rav so that he wouldn't be too upset. He was already not well, and they thought it would be too upsetting for him to hear that Rav Moshe died. And on Erev Pesach, as the guy who took care of him was driving, I think it was Rabbi Brander, it must have been Rabbi Brander, was driving him to the airport to go back to Boston for Yom Tov, Rav Soloveitchik turned to him and he said, "Why didn't you tell me that Rav Moshe passed away?" And he was stunned because Rav Soloveitchik was clearly upset, and he was, you know, he had hid this information from Rav Soloveitchik, and he said, "You know, your family didn't want to upset you too much, and they asked me to hide it from you." So he said, "How did you know?" So Rav Soloveitchik said, "Because every year of Yom Tov, Rav Moshe and I take turns calling each other to wish each other a good Yom Tov, and it was his turn to call, and he didn't call, so I called his house to wish him a good Yom Tov, and his family told me, and that's how Rav Soloveitchik found out that Rav Moshe was Nifter." In fact, when Rav Soloveitchik turned 80 years old, the yeshiva put out a sefer called Kavod HaRav in honor of Rav Soloveitchik, and a lot of people contributed essays to the sefer, and Rav Moshe contributed an essay to the sefer, and he wrote a beautiful bracha wishing Rav Soloveitchik hatzlacha both in his teaching and in his klal work, and he writes that it should be in the honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Torah, and for the glory of our family. He relates to the family connection in that bracha, and it drove the briskers in Eretz Yisrael absolutely bonkers that the Pesach Adar in America would speak so glowingly of Rav Soloveitchik and take such great pride in their family connection with each other. And it's one thing to highlight Rav Soloveitchik's Torah, which was unquestionable, but they highlighted his klal work, which means all of his work for Mizrahi, that was being highlighted. There was a terrible letter that was written by somewhat anonymously by Talmidim of the Brisker Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael against Rav Moshe and against Rav Gifter for contributing articles in that sefer, and it said horrible, horrible things about Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Gifter also wrote, Rav Gifter went a step further. Rav Gifter wrote an essay and a bracha where he said that Rav Soloveitchik's great contribution is in perpetuating the base brisk. And if you really want to drive a brisker crazy, you say that Rav Soloveitchik in America was perpetuating the base brisk. They were not too happy with that. Rav Rudiman also contributed. Rav Soloveitchik was known as one of the Gedolei Torah, so of course they were all going to contribute. In fact, someone mentioned that Rav Reuven Feinstein once commented that it's so ironic that everybody called Rav Moshe the Rosh Yeshiva. Even Rav Moshe's own children, they call him the Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Soloveitchik, everyone called the Rav. In the roles that they served Klal Yisrael, it was really the opposite. Rav Moshe had a little yeshiva, Tiferes Yerushalayim, but his real contribution to Klal Yisrael was as the Rav of Klal Yisrael, the Posek of Klal Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik obviously was a prominent Posek, and Rabbanim asked him the Shailas, but the only reason the Rabbanim were asking the Shailas is because they were Talmidim of his in the yeshiva. He's the one that gave the Shiurim. The roles that they served for Klal Yisrael were the reverse. Though it should be noted, Rav Moshe was more proud of his Shiurim that are published in Dibros Moshe than he was of his Igros Moshe. Moreno Rav Shechter told us that when he got married, Rav Moshe Feinstein attended the wedding, and he later sent a wedding gift with Rav Michal Shurkin. Rav Michal Shurkin used to learn in MTJ, and he would come to hear Rav Soloveitchik Shiurim in YU. So he was always traveling back and forth, so Rav Moshe sent a wedding gift to Rav Shechter through Rav Michal Shurkin, and Rav Michal Shurkin brought two volumes of Igros Moshe and one volume of Dibros Moshe as a wedding gift. And Rav Shurkin explained to Rav Shechter that if you look, Rav Moshe specifically inscribed the volume of Dibros Moshe because he dedicated much more time to working out those ideas. That was much more valuable to him. In fact, Rav Shechter writes in Divrei HaRav that this same comment that Rav Reuven Feinstein made of the roles being reversed, the Rav himself used to say. He made this ha'ara about the reverse titles that he and Rav Moshe had, and he said that and Rav Shechter explained, you know, a lot of times people talk about Rav Soloveitchik's humility, how he would always refer to himself as a melamed. He said it wasn't about, and people think it means he should have called himself a Rosh Yeshiva, that he was such a chashuv Rosh Yeshiva, and he only called himself a melamed. Rav Shechter said they misunderstood. Melamed and Rosh Rosh Hashiva meant the same thing in his mind. It never would have occurred to him to distinguish between the word Melamed and the word Rosh Hashiva. What he meant was, I'm not a Rav, I'm a Melamed. Stop calling me the Rav. I'm a Melamed. I teach Torah to Talmidim. That's what he really meant when he referred to himself as a Melamed. When Rav Moshe was at a wedding and Rav Soloveitchik was the Masada Kiddushin, he would always pass along the Seder Kiddushin to Rav Moshe. This happened at Rav Shechter's wedding. Rav Moshe was in attendance, or Rav Soloveitchik would say, okay, with the power vested in me as the Masada Kiddushin, I hereby ask Rav Moshe to say the Birchas Erusin and to serve as the Masada Kiddushin. And that would happen. It happened several times. I've seen a lot of people do that in our generation with Rav Shechter. Once I was at two weddings in a week, where there was one Rav Yaakov Neuberger Shlita was Masada Kedushin, and the other was Rav Ben Chaim, two great Sephardic Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva. And Rav Shechter was in attendance at both weddings, and both of them stepped aside and would not be Masada Kedushin with Rav Shechter there. Rav Shechter writes in Divrei Rav that once Rav Soloveitchik was at a wedding and he insisted that the Chassan and Kala face east, which is an unusual thing. When I meet with Chassan and Kala, so we work through all the different minhagim and the different things that they're going to be makbid about. So one of the things I ask is, which way do you want, which direction do you want to face? There are some poskim that say the Chassan and Kala should face toward the crowd. Other poskim that say, no, they should dafka face away from the crowd, have a more private moment. Rav Soloveitchik got an unusual shita, that they should face east, which could be a strange angle. It's not great for pictures if you have the Chassan and Kala facing east. But Rav Soloveitchik was makbid about that, and then a few weeks later he was at another wedding at the same place, and Rav Moshe was there too, and this time Rav Soloveitchik didn't say anything when they weren't facing east. So when he was asked about it, he just said, Rav Moshe is correct. Rav Moshe is correct. He didn't want to be seen as publicly arguing on Rav Moshe. That was the relationship in terms of Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe. Now, what about halacha? Did they disagree in halacha? Yes, many times they disagreed in halacha. I'll just highlight maybe five or six prominent disagreements in halacha. First of all, brushing teeth on Shabbos. Rav Moshe has a tshuva that you're not allowed to use toothpaste because it's a violation of mamareach. You're not allowed to use a toothbrush that's wet because it's a violation of schita. You're not allowed to wash a toothbrush after you brush your teeth because it's a violation of hachana. Rav Soloveitchik thought none of that was correct. He thought it's not mamareach and it's not hachana and it's not schita. He didn't think any of it was a problem. In fact, when one Talmud told Rav Soloveitchik that Rav Moshe holds you're not allowed to brush your teeth because it's mimachek. Mimareach is a tolda of mimachek. So Rav Soloveitchik was under the impression that the Talmud meant that you're smoothing out your teeth. By scrubbing down the teeth, you're smoothing out your teeth. Rav Soloveitchik said, that can't be true. Because if it were really mimachek means to scrape down the surface of something. Not to remove dirt from the surface, but to scrape down the actual surface. So Rav Soloveitchik said, then if you brushed your teeth 100 times, you wouldn't have any teeth left. You're not sanding down your teeth when you're brushing your teeth. Of course, it's not what Rav Moshe meant. Rav Moshe meant that it's a tolda of mimachek. It's mimareach on the toothpaste. When you're smoothing out the toothpaste over your teeth. But that was one prominent machlokas between Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe. Of course, Rav Shlomo Zalman had a third shita about that. There are a number of different. Rav Vadia had a fourth shita about that. There are different shitas about one. What one can and cannot do when brushing their teeth on Shabbos. Another example where they argued in Sefer Mipnei Arav on page Sadivav, Rav Shechter reports that Amisha held that it's mutter to make ice cubes on Shabbos. There's no problem putting water into a freezer in order to make ice cubes. Rav Soloveitchik thought it was a melacha d'oraisa of bona. So it's a minakotze elakotze, that Rav Moshe thought it was heter gomer, totally permissible, and Rav Soloveitchik thought it's a melacha d'oraisa. Another example in Divrei Arav, page Kuf Mem Gimel, Rav Shechter reports that when asked if a non-Jewish teacher working in a yeshiva should be asked to wear a yarmulke, a non-Jewish male teacher working in a yeshiva should be asked to wear a yarmulke, Rav Soloveitchik said not to ask him to wear a yarmulke, and there's no reason to ask him to do so, whereas Rav Moshe said he should conform to the standards of the institution, and that's the dress code of the institution, that all men wear a yarmulke, and therefore even the non-Jewish teacher should in fact wear a yarmulke. Interestingly, Rav Aaron Cutler had a third shita. He said that he absolutely must not wear a yarmulke because you have to distinguish the Jew from the non-Jew in terms of the obligation of wearing a yarmulke. One of the more controversial disagreements that they had was with regard to the synagogue council. In 1954, Rav Soloveitchik was clearly the leader of modern Orthodoxy in America was asked whether it was permissible for Orthodox rabbis and Orthodox shuls to cooperate together in a united organization with non-Orthodox rabbis and shuls. What was called the Synagogue Council. I believe it came up when Mo Feuerstein from Boston was invited for the appointment of a new president of the Synagogue Council, and he happened to have brought up the issue with Rav Soloveitchik, who wanted to bring it up with the Halacha Commission of the RCA, and he also mentioned, or Mo Feuerstein mentioned it to Rav Aaron Cutler when he saw him at a wedding or something. And when Rav Aaron Cutler heard about this, he got very agitated, and he immediately put together a kol kore, a group of 11 gedolim who signed a letter against the Synagogue Council. That group of gedolim included two rebbeim from Yeshiva University, Rav Mendel Zaks, the son-in-law of the Chavetz Chaim, and Rav David Lipschitz, Zichronam Levracha, both prominent rabbinic figures in Yeshiva University, as well as Rav Meishan, Rav Ruderman, and Rav Hutner, all the big names of the Haredi world. The only one who refused to sign was Rav Lazer Silver. Rav Lazer Silver thought it was the entire Cherem was targeted. It was a targeted attack toward YU. He was not interested in participating in signing on that. Rav Soloveitchik had a nuanced approach. He did not think that there should be absolute cooperation between the different streams of Judaism. He thought that there was a difference between, as my uncle Julius Berman has explained to me many times, a difference between klape pnim and klape chutz, that when dealing with internal issues of the Jewish people, we have to distinguish those who observe the Torah and the tenets of our belief from those who do not. But klape chutz, Hitler didn't distinguish between us. Klape chutz, when we're facing the rest of the world, we are a unified Jewish people when we're facing the rest of the world. He had a much more nuanced and detailed explanation of where that chiluk comes from the covenant of Sinai is one element, and then there's the from Mitzrayim, another element, where he described the difference between klape pnim and klape chutz. It happens to be, my uncle told me that he asked Rav Meisha, my uncle Julie Berman was close with Rav Meisha also, because Rav Meisha used to come to their family home in Connecticut during the summers. So he told me that he asked Rav Meisha about what he should do. All these big rabbanim are against his Rebbe. So Rav Meisha said to him, "Your Rebbe spoke. What do you mean? You always ask your Rebbe for advice. So you should follow what your Rebbe says." And that's it. He didn't think that there was much of a shaila. Eventually, the Synagogue Council died. Decades later, the Synagogue Council was disbanded. Rabbi Tendler Shlita, you should have a Rufu Shlema, was certainly son-in-law of Rav Meisha, and he always describes it as it died a well-deserved death. Not everyone felt that way, but certainly Talmidim of those signatories certainly felt that way. Rabbi Rakefet said that Rabbi Stolper, Zichron Lebracha, said a Shechianu B'Shemu Malchus when they announced at an OU convention the disbanding of the Synagogue Council, that it was that contentious of an issue. Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Meisha also disagreed about the height of a mechitza. Rav Soloveitchik thought that it's not a bittul mitzvah binyan beis hakneses if a mechitza is 10 tefachim, even though he preferred that it be much higher, whereas Rav Meisha held that it had to be shoulder height. Even we discussed mechitza once in one of the previous shiurim, when I think we spoke about Rav Meisha and the Satmar Rebbe, maybe. The Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Meisha disagreed about wrapping tefillin. Rav Soloveitchik had a practice, a family practice, that when putting on the tefillin shel yad, he would wrap all the way down, including the fingers, all around the fingers, before putting on the shel rosh. Common practice is you wrap around the forearm, do not wrap the fingers, put on the shel rosh, and then go back to wrap the fingers. Neither Rav Meisha nor Rav Soloveitchik did the common practice. Rav Soloveitchik would wrap all the way down, including the fingers, then put on the shel rosh, whereas Rav Meisha would just wrap twice around the arm, two or three times around the arm, just to hold it in place, then put on the shel rosh, then go back and re-wrap the entire thing. Clearly, Rav Soloveitchik held, based on family tradition, that all of the wrapping of the tefillin, including what you wrap around your fingers, is considered to be a major, considered to be part of the a critical component of the mitzvah of kshira, of the mitzvah of tying the tefillin, whereas Rav Meisha held that he wanted to minimize the hefsik as much as possible between the bracha of lahaniach tefillin that one says on the arm and the placement of the tefillin shel rosh. Rav Soloveitchik didn't want to make a big deal about it. When someone came over to him and said, "I think the Rav made a mistake because he really really you're not supposed to wrap around your fingers before you put on the Shal Rosh, he, instead of explaining, he just said, oh, I forgot. You know, he didn't think that he needed to explain all of his family minhagim to everybody. There was also a difference between Salvation and Moshe in terms of Hashkafa, in terms of the, or I guess Halach also in terms of the attitude toward Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Rav Moshe has a tshuva of Nezer Chel Galv Sim Kuf Beis, where he holds that while it is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, it is only a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyuvis. It is a mitzvah reshus. It is something that one has the right to opt in or opt out of. It is not obligatory, whereas most of the posts, including Rav Salvezhik, assume that if you hold it's a mitzvah, then it's a mitzvah. Mitzvah means a command. There are sometimes heterim, there are sometimes other factors that override the mitzvah, but to just say that it's completely optional is quite a chiddush. Rav Moshe and Rav Salvezhik also disagreed about their attitude towards secular studies. Rav Moshe was once asked about whether students are allowed to cheat on state exams because it will give them more time to learn Torah if they don't have to study. So Rav Moshe completely rejected that. He rejected the premise that a yeshiva boy would even ask such a question or would even contemplate the possibility of being dishonest on an exam. Rav Moshe writes in that tshuva that it must be that anti-Semites are starting rumors that Jewish boys would consider cheating on an exam because there's no way that a Jewish boy who was educated in yeshivos would ever even think this way. But Rav Moshe said, you don't have to study secular studies. If you don't want to study secular studies, just don't do it. But if you're going to do it, you can't cheat. And Rav Moshe was certainly against, certainly in the written tshuvas, although I'm sure when people asked him questions, he addressed each individual based on their circumstances. But in the written tshuvas, he did not think that a college education was necessary. He did not think that that was part of the shtadlus one needs to make in terms of earning a living. And he was concerned that if a young boys are busy learning secular studies for much of the day from a young age, we're never going to develop genuine Talmidei Chachamim. Whereas Rav Salvezhik obviously was much more supportive of secular studies, and obviously he himself went to university in Berlin and pursued a very high level of secular studies. They produced a film a number of years ago about Rav Salvezhik, and when they asked Rav Salvezhik, how is it that you're such a great gadol and you spent all this time studying secular studies? How did you manage to catch up to be on the same madriga as all these other gedolim? So Rav Salvezhik said, it's simple. When the other gedolim are learning, I'm learning. And when they're speaking Lashon Hara about me, that's when I study secular studies. So we're all learning the same amount of time. But that was a difference of opinion between Rav Salvezhik and Rav Moshe. Now, the one I wanted to talk about, but I only left 4 minutes to do so, is the issue of women's learning. This is a fascinating question, because Medina de Gemara, if you study the sugyas in the Talmud, the Maseches Kiddushin Daf Chavtes, it is clear the Gemara tells us that women are not obligated in Talmud Torah, which is one thing, but then you study the sugyas in Maseches Sota, Daf Chav and Daf Chav Aleph, and it seems that not only are women not obligated in Talmud Torah, but it's somehow problematic for women to be learning Torah. And you follow it through, and the Rishonim, the Rambam, speaks very, very strongly against Talmud Torah for women, and he writes, Isha Shalom de Torah, the Rambam in the first paragraph of Hilchos Talmud Torah, Halacha Yud Gimel, says if a woman learned Torah, Yesh la schar, she gets rewarded for learning, Avalein l'schar ish, mibnei shalom et staves, she doesn't get the same schar that a man would get because she's not commanded in learning, and whenever you're not commanded in a mitzvah, it's always a lower level of schar. And he says, but v'yaf al pi she yesh la schar, tzivu chachamim shalo yela amir adam es pito Torah. The Chacham said that one should not teach his daughter Torah, the Rambam writes that most women are not going to be, their minds are not going to be properly oriented to learning Torah and to the rigors of Talmud Torah. And when Chazal say that it's kilu lamda tiflus, that it's as if you're teaching immorality when you're teaching your daughter Torah, the Rambam says that's reserved for Torah Shebal Peh. But Torah Shebichsav is not right. You shouldn't teach your daughter Torah Shebichsav, but it's not kilu lamda tiflus. But still very strong, the Rambam says that one should not teach their daughters Torah. And Rav Moshe just takes it straight like that. Rav Moshe does not really distinguish. Rav Moshe in a tshuva written to the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva, Rav Elia Svei, Zecharon Levracha, in Yerodeh Chelek Gimelsim Peizayin in Negros Moshe, Rav Moshe writes, you know, if a Beis Yaakov wants to learn Mishnayos, you got to look at the Rambam, where the Rambam says that teaching Torah Shebal Peh is Kilu Limda Tiflus. So he says, so you should learn Pirkei Avos and Musar and Hanhagos Tova, Kabbalos and teach in Avas HaTorah and Midos Tovos, but not any other Masechta Mishnayos other than Pirkei Avos. And then Rav Moshe writes in this one paragraph tshuva, Umitoch hapshitus akatzer. Because it's such an obvious thing, it's an explicit Rambam, I'm not going to elaborate. I'm going to be as brief as possible. Although normally when Rav Moshe wrote to Gedolei Torah, to people of great stature, he analyzed the sugya and he went into great detail. In this tshuva, he chose not to. Rav Salvechik didn't really ever speak so much about the obligation of women to learn Torah nowadays, but he allowed his actions to speak louder than words. Meaning the inaugural Gemara Shir in Stern College, very famously, was given by Rav Soloveitchik. So obviously he thought that women should be taught Gemara, and although his Rebbetzin, his wife, was much more responsible for the curriculum in the Maimonides school, you have to imagine that Rav Soloveitchik had some say in the matter, and the Maimonides school was certainly set up in such a way that the boys and the girls received the same education. So Rav Twersky, in his eulogy for his grandfather, in his eulogy for Rav Soloveitchik, explained his grandfather's opinion. And he said, the halacha prohibiting Torah study for women is not indiscriminate nor all-encompassing. There is complete unanimity that women are obligated to study halachas pertaining to mitzvahs which are incumbent upon them. Meaning, the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, and everybody agrees, that a woman is obligated to study halacha. They have to know halacha. A woman has to know halacha Shabbos just like a man does. A woman has to know halachas kashrus just like, if not better than, a man does, because you have to observe all the mitzvos. The prohibition of teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to women relates to optional study. But if ever circumstances dictate that study of Torah Shebaal Peh is no longer optional, why would it no longer be optional? It's now necessary to provide a firm foundation for faith, then such study becomes obligatory, and obviously lies beyond the pale of any prohibition. Undoubtedly, the Rav's prescription was more far-reaching than that of the Chafetz Chaim and others, but the difference in magnitude should not obscure their fundamental agreement. And that's how Rav Twersky explained Rav Soloveitchik's approach towards women Talmud study, essentially suggesting that a sophisticated woman who studies every other subject on the highest level and is exposed to the rigors of academic study needs to be exposed as well to how Torah not only matches but really dwarfs every other area of study, to appreciate the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Torah, to appreciate the foundation of faith that the Torah can provide. And that is the circumstance of certainly the 20th century and Kal Vachomer the 21st century, where Soloveitchik felt that it was necessary to have very rigorous Torah study for women as well. So that's, again, there's a lot more to say on that topic, but our time is up, and I appreciate you allowing me 2 minutes of overtime. And again, thank you so much for this entire series and for coming out to learn on Sunday mornings once a month for the past year. Be'ez Hashem, I hope there will be many other opportunities for us to learn together.
We want to thank you, Rabbi Leibowitz.